Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 19, a chapter is entitled The Appearance of Sukhdev Goswami, text number 15. Tam upayatam pratiyantu vipra. Ganga cha devi drita chattamishe. Dvijo pashita kukakos takshakontava. Dvijo pashita kukakos takshakova. Dashatvalam gayata Vishnu gatha. Tamopayatam pratiyantu vipra. Ganga cha devi drita chittamishe. Dvijo pashishta kushakas takshakova. Dashatvalam gayata Vishnu gatha. Tamopayatam pratiyantu vipra. Ganga cha devi drita chittamishe. Dvijo pashishta kuhakas takshakova. Dashatvalam gayata Vishnu gatha. Can you repeat? Tamopayatam parityantu vipra. Ganga cha devi drita chittamishe. Dvijo pashishta kuhakas takshakova. Dashatvalam gayata Vishnu gatha. Tamopayatam pratiyantu vipra. Ganga cha devi drita chittamishe. Dvijo pashishta kuhakas takshakova. Dashatvalam gayata Vishnu gatha. Tamopayatam pratiyantu vipra. Ganga cha devi drita chittamishe. Dvijo pashishta kuhakas takshakova. Dashatvalam gayata Vishnu gatha. Tamopayatam pratiyantu vipra. Ganga cha devi drita chittamishe. Dvijo pashishta kuhakas takshakova. Dashatvalam gayata Vishnu gatha. Ladies. Tamopayatam pratiyantu vipra. Ganga cha devi drita chittamishe. Dvijo pashishta kuhakas takshakova. Dashatvalam gayata Vishnu gatha. Ladies. Tamopayatam pratiyantu vipra. Ganga cha devi drita chittam ishe Dvijopashishta kuhakas takshakova Dasa pratam dayata vishnu nata Tammopayatam pratiyantu vipra Ganga cha devi chitamitamite Vijopashishta kuhakas takshakova Dashatvalam gayata vishnu gata Tam, for that reason, ma, me, upayatam, taken shelter of, pratiyantu, just accept me, vipra, O brahmanas, Ganga, Mother Ganges, cha, also, Devi, direct representative of the Lord. Drita, taken into. Chittam, heart. Ishe, unto the Lord. Dvija upashishta, created by the Brahman. Kuhaka, something magical. Takshaka, the snake bird. Va, either, dashatu, let it bite. Alam, without further delay. Gayata, please go on singing. Vishnu Gata, narration of the deeds of Vishnu. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. O Brahmanas, just accept me as a completely surrendered soul, and let Mother Ganges, the representative of the Lord, also accept me in that way. For I have already taken the lotus feet of the Lord into my heart. Let the snake bird, or whatever magical thing the Brahmana created, bite me at once. I only desire that you all continue singing the deeds of Lord Vishnu. Purport. As soon as one is given up completely unto the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, he is not at all afraid of death. The atmosphere created by the presence of great devotees of the Lord on the bank of the Ganges and Maharaj Parikshit's complete acceptance of the Lord's lotus feet was sufficient guarantee to the king for going back to Godhead. He thus became absolutely free from all fear of death. Om Agyan Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Nama Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sva Padantikam Vandeham Shri Gurum Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamsa Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Vada Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitam Shri Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Vipasindubhayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda
Shri Advaita Gadadha, Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, welcome to all of you on this special day today, being the appearance day of Gadadhar Pandit, one of the Panchatattvas, and disappearance day of our most respected, beloved Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Maybe later on we will speak a little bit about him also. So today, in the continuation of this wonderful revealing chapter of appearance of Sukhdev Goswami, as we've seen that so many verses have gone by, this is the 15th verse, and Sukhdev Goswami has not yet appeared because the Maharaj Parikshit's own beautiful revelations of after hearing the curse are continuing. And today is especially very extraordinary verse for us, all of us, because both in the text what Parikshit Maharaj speaks and also in the brief purport by Srila Prabhupada, he talks about fear. And fear is a subject which is not very pleasant but very close to our heart, because it's always there. Sometimes we are aware of it, sometimes we are not aware. And you can see that very transparently and right from his heart, Parikshit Maharaj immediately said that since I am completely surrendered unto the lotus feet, I have no fear. Let the takshak bird come and bite me immediately. It was not a defiance. It was just a complete surrender. And it's easy to say, you know, right now when we hear about it or when we read about it, or when we kind of try to visualize, sometimes we may be having visions of what we see in movies, no? The kind of reckless courage, you know, they'll say defiantly, whatever. But try to imagine when you actually face it. And many of us have actually had, almost all of us must have had relatives who have suddenly been given the death notice and said, you don't have much time. And you can understand the kind of, even if you are devotees, even if you are following the practice, you know, we do go through the panic attacks, we go through such anxiety. What to speak of such major calamities? Even if you get, supposing you get up in the morning and you have fever, the fever rises to 102.5, and then we start getting worried because 103, then, you know, start pressing the panic buttons. It consumes so much of our thought and worries. So even if it is not a life-threatening, but we get so worried. So basically that shows that, you know, our attachment to the body remains very strong. It's very, very strong. But the difference is that we do recognize, we identify, first of all, with the philosophy, and also when we hear from the great souls who actually live it. And then we do know, also from the lives of many great souls who have passed through this, and also our contemporary devotee friends. So many of them have dozens of great devotees in our own congregation. It's amazing how simple, ordinary people from the external side, but when it really comes to the test, how Krishna reciprocates and gives them the strength. And we have seen it. I think that, you know, there is the resilience that comes, there is an understanding that comes, there is a calmness that comes, because they are an association of not just great devotees, but also constantly surrounded by Krishna's representatives and Krishna's paraphernalia in the form of deities, the kirtan, and the philosophy. And therefore we can take heart and see that we also need to follow in that footstep, because it is a matter of time. Whether we have 1 year or 10 years or 20 years, who knows? And it can come any time. So there is no need to be morbid, but at the same time, the other extreme is that people just don't like to discuss. I am so often caught up with people, you know, who, if you just even talk about the word, you know, they suddenly start saying, no, don't talk about it, don't talk about it. Means they don't even want to hear a basic reality like this, that we are all growing old, we are going to have fragile bodies, and, you know, sooner or later we'll have to depart. And each one can experience it. I mean, I can say that, okay, what I was in my 20s or 30s, and I can see, now sometimes I feel I can do this and then I can't now. Because now we're in the 80s, 60s and 70s, and gradually our body is failing. There is physical limitations, and there is also more and more vulnerabilities that come in. So, this kind of anxieties and fear, we need to battle. And only, the only way, as Maharaj Parikshit has shown, is that we have to just stick to the process by which we become completely, totally surrendered to the Lord. So it is, initially it may be a concept, it may be an intellectual feeling that yes, I will, we must do it. But never mind, even if we do not, even if it is mental, but following the process and having faith is the key. Now we see in Parikshit Maharaj's case, the faith was so strong that it took he didn't even need even a moment to do the right thing. You know, it wasn't that he took the decision immediately, and not only that, he, as we've read, that he didn't even consider using his powers to counter it. He was such a great pure devotee, great personality. He was in touch with the greatest personalities in the whole universe, that he could have easily, you know, thwarted it, reversed it also. He didn't even consider it for a second. Not only that, he didn't even get angry. He didn't even feel, he just took it as Krishna's will. So he took the decision that now I must leave my next 7 days for the best opportunity I have to connect to Krishna. But then see, at the same time he took consultation. This is his humility, that he also consulted the great souls who also fully agreed. And we can see how they reciprocate. Suddenly he's sitting there, and now Sukhdev Goswami Maharaj is going to appear. And among tens of thousands of the greatest souls in the whole whole universe, not just this planet, we've seen so many devotees, so many great personalities have come. Immediately they've come, because so that's a sign that Krishna sends his representatives in many forms, and they are here to see that, not only bless but also confirm that this is the right decision. So this is what we can see, they take heart from it. And also when we go through the scriptures, we do see the there are many sets of people. On one side you have Kans, you have who have, you know, we know his story about how fearful he was just before he was killed by his nephew Krishna. And he was so consumed by fear. Such an enormous great personality, great in the sense of strength, and he was very, very extraordinarily powerful. I mean, even the demigods were scared of him, but when it came, he became so fearful. Dhritarashtra, Duryodhan, we can see they were constantly consumed by fear and anxiety. Duryodhan had everything with him, he had managed to push the Pandavas out, and yet his 13 years that he ruled, when he illegally pushed them out, still he was only consumed by thinking how, you know, how the Pandavas don't come beyond the 13 years. So he didn't even enjoy his 13 years because he was so much consumed by that, those worries. And on the other end, you have Queen Kunti in the same story, on the other side. Externally, one would see that Kunti was suffering and so much. But actually, when it came to the when the war was over and Yudhishthira Maharaj was being crowned the emperor, and Queen Kunti at that time, she was completely heartbroken for the first time, and her prayers to Krishna revealed that actually for her the greatest the greatest worry, anxiety was that Krishna is going away. Not that, in fact, she should be at the culmination or the peak of her happiness, because All her sufferings, so-called sufferings, were going away. But she, on the contrary, is saying that, let the calamities come. Let them come again and again, because then I will see you, Krishna. So, you can see the contrast that right through the actual, what we consider calamities in terms of, you know, being taken, luxuries were taken away, her status was taken away, there was humiliation, her sons were humiliated, daughter-in-law was humiliated, she was thrown into the forest. That didn't bother her. She could manage. But when it came to losing Krishna, that really affected her. Same with Amrish Maharaj, you know, when he was, Durvasa Muni was about to try to kill him, and then actually Amrish Maharaj was protected. So he stood there without any remorse, without any anger, without any recrimination, and he waited for Durvasa Muni to come back. And when he came and apologized, Amrish Maharaj immediately readily agreed. But he had no fear at all. Same with Prahlad Maharaj, we see such a young boy. Hiranyakashipu was the most powerful personality. So in all this we can see contrasting situations that we, it ultimately comes down to whether we have faith in the word of Krishna and faith in the word of our Guru, so that even if we do not comprehend the whole situation, but if we have faith that they comprehend and that we follow their path, that is something which is really we need to question. And how to strengthen that is really Krishna consciousness. Our life, whatever we do, whether we take to our chanting, reading, associating, if it does not increase our faith in the sadhus and in the scriptures, then really we need to question and introspect. Because then something is wrong. Because ultimately, if it has to result in that increasing faith, and that comes with is following the process. And we are so fortunate that today, as we said, that there is the disappearance day of His Divine Grace, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Sachidananda Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who actually just appeared just a few generations before us. So we would like to speak something about him in our class today. Basically, why do we celebrate these appearances, disappearances? We have festivals. Because they not only represent Krishna in these great saints and sadhus, but also because they constantly remind us of the true path, that they have come here and sacrifice their lives to bless us and to help us to come out of our miseries. So we are so grateful. That is why we reciprocate by celebrating, and it is a mixture of gratitude, happiness. So so therefore these are very sacred events. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur actually he taught us how to live as a grihastha and yet be completely saintly. So that becomes an extremely relevant for us. One is because he was only about 50, 55 years old when Prabhupada was born. If you look at it that way, or if I say that, you know, he departed only just 108 years, 109 years ago. And our grandfathers were on this planet. So it's not that far, it's just a few generations before. And at the same time, he was also a grihastha. He had a wife and 10 children, all Krishna conscious. He gave them so much time. They never had any complaints. And he was born in 1838 and departed in 1914. So we consider generally saints as and sadhus as sannyasis. But this is also special. He showed us that how... why he is revered so much, why Srila Prabhupada quoted him so often, constantly in his various lectures. And Srila Prabhupada really always referred to him as his grandfather guru, because his guru's, he was also his guru's father, but also for Prabhupada he was a very, very strong shiksha guru. So therefore, he is a sadhu who it has shown that it did not matter externally what he was. Though he became a Babaji for the last few years of his life, but your whole life he had responsibilities, he had a family. He was a district magistrate, extremely learned and very highly educated. But at the same time, his grandfather was very wealthy, so he went to all the best schools at that time. But because he was very educated, he was moving around in those circles, literate circles. And what he found was that that time, this is the British era. So the Britishers were extremely critical of the Hindu way of life. Everywhere he went, they considered it as a mythological, hodgepodge, bogus, rubbish kind of situation. So, there was no dignity, no respectability given at all. So he could perceive that. And that made him, and he himself, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, had already learned the Quran, he had learned the Bible, and when he had learned about the Srimad Bhagavatam, then he understood that all the religions actually are encompassed within the Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam covers that and much more. And then he really did so much of research, and then he was constantly traveling, preaching. In spite of his busy schedules, this was a key aspect for him. So he wanted to counter this thinking that it is just foolish superstition and having so many millions of gods, which we hear even today. But that had been, you can imagine at that time, the country also was ruled by the British. Today at least we do not have them ruling over it. And though we have people who, their representatives who have the same views, but here, that was a much more difficult situation for Thakur Bhaktivinoda. So, because he knew the Old Testament, New Testament, the Quran, and then he could see how it was captured within the essence was really within even the Bhagavatam. So, after studying the Chaitanya Charitamrita, so he was going everywhere. And because he was so proficient in his own occupation as a district magistrate, he was very much in demand everywhere. It is said that every district in West Bengal wanted him as the wanted Kedarnath Datta. That was his name. They wanted Kedarnath Datta as the district magistrate because, as a judge, he was able to. He was because of his clarity of vision and his purity. He could very clearly come to conclusions very fast. He made decisions within 5 minutes what people would take, other judges would take 30 minutes. And then you would take another 20, 25 minutes to write the cases, because you write the case to support his judgment. So, he would handle 30 to 50 cases a day. And we'll see later how his schedule was. This is something which one would feel that maybe Krishna was partial and gave somebody 48 hours and he's given us only 24. But no, he also had only 24 hours and he could manage that. So his whole approach was to try to see that, today also consider that he started the spiritual revival in Bengal and Odisha particularly, was primarily because he wanted to counter the misleading propaganda against the true religion. And that he could do along with his responsibility as a district magistrate. At the same time, he was so influential and he's so proficient in his occupation that the British government also had enormous respect for him because he was wanted everywhere. Now, Thakur Bhaktivinoda was that time district magistrate in Krishnanagar, which is about 20 odd miles from Mayapur now, but he was staying in Navadvip. So they actually the British laid a railway line, which actually just for his convenience, so that he could quickly come from his residence. And that you can all of you probably must have gone to Mayapur. We have all seen that on the other bank of the Jalangi. And how the railway line is still there, which took him from his residence to Krishnanagar. So that just showed how important he was also, and he was fearless. We talked about fear. He's a classic case that in spite of working with the British, what was the truth, he would be very, very clear. And the British would also respect, though they did not agree. At one time, he was transferred to Jagannath Puri as the district magistrate. And there, in Puri, he found that the temple was completely mismanaged. You know, the pujaris were also leading immoral lives. The standards were practically defunct, or everything was in a total chaos. And he completely straightened things out so well that eventually, within a few days, you know, the Chappan Bhog and all the offerings were done within exactly to the minute. No delays at all. Everything was clockwork. So he was very efficient. He was also very pure, and he was very bold enough to do it. And but at the same time, it was not. He was always very discriminating against among the sadhus. So he was very much against bogus sadhus. And he could understand that there were many sadhus who also had mystical powers. And just by showing that power, they would mislead people into feeling that they, you know, today also we see how people get so mystified by some miracle. Even if today Jadugar comes, I think so many people would frown. So what to speak of somebody who actually does some kind of, who has some mystical powers. But in the name of that, they were misleading people. So, you know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was very much against that. So he was being a judge. He would weed them out. He would actually file cases in court and put them in jail. At the same time, when he saw pure devotees, very genuine sadhus, they may not physically appear like that, but when he could understand somebody who was really deeply attached to the Lord, then he would make every effort to see that they come to his home, and he would teach his family how to respect them, how to serve them prasad, how to respect sadhus at home. So he was always encouraging that. So you can see that at the same time, you know, he encompassed so many qualities. He was very humble, he was very influential, very powerful. He was also very learned, but at the same time, a rare combination, somebody who was very simple and meek, but at the same time stood very strongly for the truth. Bhaktivinoda Thakur's major, his drive was really his anxiety, really, was to see how he could spread the message of Lord Chaitanya and his life and teachings all over the world. And it is to his credit that in the history of this universe, for the first time ever, in 1896, that happens to be also the appearance year of Srila Prabhupada. So in 1896, the first book, Life and Precepts of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, written by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he sent to various universities and libraries all over the world. When Prabhupada went to Toronto later on in 1968-69, one of the devotees actually went and got a book from the McGill University and showed Prabhupada that it was still there, the original which was sent by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So you can see the vision also, that he was looking for the entire world's upliftment. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, first of all, the country was subjugated, governed by foreign power. But he went beyond that. He never looked at it. He was looking at how he could see the suffering, whether it is the British or the Indians or whoever. Everybody on the concept of the body was suffering, and how could he bring? When he immediately understood from the Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita that how this message could actually help the world. So his entire effort was towards that, and he was very often praying to Krishna. That, you know, I would, even in his poems he has written, but when he would say that, you know, this is my message, I really want to spread Sanatana Dharma, and I'm feeling so weak and vulnerable, you know, I'm just a tiny person here, what can I do, so please help me. And in reciprocation of that, you know, he had, as you say, he had 10 children. So the fourth child, to Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur, was born in Jagannath Puri, and it happened that there was this Rath Yatra of Jagannath Puri, which and Bhaktivinoda Thakur's house was right on the. It is still there. If you go to Puri, people, in fact, the Yatra is next week, Rath Yatra. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur's house is right on the road, on the main road, which takes the deities from the Rath from the main temple to Gundicha Mandir. So, because he was the superintendent of the, at that time he was in Puri and he was the superintendent of the temple. So, what happened was that the Rath was just going past his house and it somehow it stopped, mystically, quite mysteriously, it just stopped, it wouldn't move. So his wife Bhagavati Devi was also a very great devotee and she immediately sensed the opportunity that her 6 month old child, the fourth child who was only 6 months old, think at least the child can have darshan. So because she was the wife of the superintendent, so she got the chance to climb up the Rath of Jagannath ji. So she took the small baby and put the baby at the feet of Lord Jagannath. And immediately, even though it was just a 6 month old baby, and, the child just reached out and touched Jagannath ji's feet. As the child touched Jagannath ji's feet, a garland fell on to the baby. So when Bhaktivinoda Thakur heard this from his wife, it was astonishing. Immediately he understood that his prayers of getting somebody to help him was answered. And that happened to be who grew up to become Bimal Prasad, who eventually was Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who was the guru of Srila Prabhupada. So this, as in the book which was written on Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, was said that he was the like a ray of Vishnu. As the Krishna helps his devotees by, you know, arming them with a ray, and with this, the ray of Vishnu actually really is the analogy for saying that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was sent specifically to help Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who happened to be his father. And through Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in the disciplic succession, we had Srila Prabhupada, and then the rest is history. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur also wrote many times in his book that he had a dream. Now again, we have to see, this is in the 19th century, 1885, 88, 89, this is over a period of time. And his dream was that someday, you know, all Americans, Russians, these are his words, Americans, Russians, Orientals, I mean Chinese, the Japanese, the Africans, they would all come to Mayapur and hold hands with the Bengali brethren and take to the streets with hoisting flags, I mean playing banners, holding banners, playing kartals, mridangas, raising the hands and singing Jai Sachinandan Gaur Hari, Jai Sachinandan Gaur Hari. So imagine how Bhaktivinoda Thakur, what a vision he had, and what was his deep intense prayer that this more than 130-40 years ago, he wanted to unite the world under the understanding of Lord Chaitanya's the philosophy, which really you know could help people transform their lives. And he saw that this would help them to put aside all nationalism, all sectarianism. You know, we see so many divisions today, so many misunderstandings. But he saw that if it has to be above all this, and taking this, you know, even under the name of religion, there was so much of sectarianism and divisions. So to remove all that, the you know, his that was his prayer. And it was just 70, 80 years ago, later, that Srila Prabhupada fulfilled that by going to the West. And actually, we see how he brought this dream to reality. We go to major temples in India also. You see people from all kinds of backgrounds and all over the world. Every continent is represented. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the son of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was also very, very powerful, extraordinary, very learned, very brilliant, There's no time to talk about him today, but to suffice to say that he started 64 temples on his own. He made thousands of disciples, one of them was Srila Prabhupada, and he really laid the foundation. So you can see each of the acharyas, why we revere the disciplic succession, because each one comes to take the they all play a part. It's all designed by Krishna. And Krishna sees that his pure representatives, each one plays his own role in throughout history. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, particularly for us, he taught us how we can be in this world but not of this world. That means he was completely focused on his responsibility, because many people feel that you take to spirituality, then our effectiveness goes down. We become quite weak. We become, we would become irresponsible. But that is actually foolish justification for laziness. I mean, for being spiritually lazy. Because you just want any reason to say that it can't be done and therefore I should give up my spirituality because it will affect me materially. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur is the answer to say that it is not true. And he could see the two things. He was absolutely proficient in his role, the best of the best in his profession, but at the same time, spiritually so completely focused only on one goal. And exactly like Arjun, Srila Prabhupada compared to Arjun, who also was very proficient in his, ultimately he won the war, he was a major contributor for the Mahabharata war victory. At the same time, because he was surrendered to Krishna, and that surrender was not just speaking, he had to also swallow his own ideas and completely, and he immediately had no hesitation. The difference between us and the difference between people who don't have fear, that is pure devotees, and us, is the issue of ego. When they identify their own entire being with the pure devotee, puts his entire being in the front of the Lord, and they don't have any false egos, because they only see Krishna's presence. And their presence is seen only as serving the Lord and seeing in what way, what capacity we can do in our lives. Whatever role we have, whatever way we have been, whichever background we have come, how can we do that? So that's the difference. So same with Arjuna also, that he didn't have any hesitation in completely surrendering. And we can see that neither of them was, they were not ineffective. They were not social parasites. They were not lazy. So we cannot have any excuses to do our best. But as it is said that we are not commit spiritual life, or for that matter, the importance in life is not measured by material success. It is not the results. It is the process. It is the effort that we make and the consciousness in which we make the effort. That is the only thing that is in our control. The result is not in our control. It may be favorable, may not be favorable. But because we are so conditioned and we are so we put so much attention importance to the result, end result, whether it is our material affluence, whether it's our education, whatever. So therefore, because we look at it as a social stigma or weakness if we are not seen in that way. So therefore we are in anxiety if we don't reach it. But the difference between us and the pure devotees is that they are only concerned with the process, and they're concerned with how they can completely dedicate their thinking transparently for this, in that process. So that's something which we can really learn from them. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur would also he sang this Griha Thakur, Vane Thakur, Sadahari Bole Thakur in one of his songs, that whether we are, he lived that and he's preached that whether we are Grihastha, whether we are in a renounced order, whatever situation we are in, whether we are a student or whether we are an adult, old person, irrespective of that, if we, it makes no difference if we're chanting the holy name. His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj has mentioned that, to be greedy is the propaganda of this world. And to be a servant, to be generous, to be charitable and live for others is the propaganda of the spiritual side. That is the great scriptures, the saints and of Krishna. So there are two propagandas. So there is one propaganda, we could say one philosophy, one way of life, which says that to work for others, to be selfless, to be charitable, to be kind, and to be a servant. Because that is like a stigma, to say a servant means, we consider that we have to be master. That is our conditioning, default mode, to be a master. Well, on the other hand, the propaganda of this world is that we have to be greedy. What is in it for me? I need to be contented. I need to be happy. Everything has to revolve around my needs. So this is where the clash comes in. We should just take a look at the daily schedule of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. We mentioned about how he had 24 hours. It looks as if, how can a person do it? And, when we read about something which is 5,000 years ago, 3,000 years ago, we may say, we may not say it, we may think that maybe there was something, who knows exactly. But this is, we're talking of someone who was here only just over a century ago. And one way to look at it is that, because many devotees in this congregation might remember a devotee called Valmiki Muni Prabhu. A very, very sweet devotee. And he left his body maybe 10 years ago or so. It was in his late 90s. And he used to come from Prabhadevi. So he came into the movement when he was already in his 80s. And I spoke to him and I came to know that he was born in 1914. So that means he was here on this planet. He was on this planet when Bhaktivinoda Thakur was on this planet. And also Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj. So, it is one way to look that we are talking of something which is quite recent. It is not something which is, thousands of years ago. So his schedule was like this, that 7:30 to 8 in the night, he would go to bed. 10 o'clock, he would get up. So I'm saying 10 o'clock in the night, not a.m. Because you might think that 10 o'clock is what I also get up. He would get up at 10 o'clock, he would rise, he would light the oil lamp, and then he would start writing. And he would write till 4 in the morning. At 4 to 4:30, he would take some rest. 4:30, he would get up, wash his face, chant from 4:30 to 7. 7 to 7:30, he would be answering all his correspondence. 7:30 to 8:30, he would be reading the scriptures, various books, also philosophical books. 8:30, if there were any visitors, he would meet them. No visitors, then he would continue reading. So basically 7:30 to 9:30 was either for his reading, partly and partly meeting, or only reading his scriptures. 9:30, he would then be walking for some time on the veranda. And he would always be meditating on various philosophical points and answers to those points. That means he would be, it is like having a dialogue internally. He would also be looking at what kind of replies to, as if he is debating with someone. And then he would have his bath, breakfast, don his uniform. He would always wear coat and pant because that was the need. And then he would, sharp, very, very punctual person, would go to, in the railway line and go to his occupation. He had on his neck 6 strands of long tulsi beads. He was very resolute in his court decisions, as we saw. He would immediately take a decision and he would not tolerate any humbug, any nonsense. So he was very, fearless. And then he would do his business and come back. He comes back in the evening and then he would translate from Sanskrit into Bengali for at least an hour or two. Then he would spend time with his family. And he would shave his head monthly, never cared what anyone thought about it. So all the people around him, the lawyers and others, were astounded. How can somebody have this kind of life? But he was so focused that he was very disciplined. He was very punctual. And he also, so some of these traits are something which we can also adapt. And because of that, his productivity is very high. And he would always carry a pocket watch. So it's not wrong to carry watches, but he was following the time. He was always on schedule. And something about his character, if you can see, this Pandit Satkari Chattopadhyay Siddhant Bhushan. He wrote Bhaktivinoda Thakur's biography. And there are so many little gems which get uncovered. We have a understanding of Bhaktivinoda Thakur as an enormous personality, a giant even among the saints. But on a practical day-to-day basis, what we can relate to, what he interwove with his occupation, with his family preoccupation, with his social interactions, and with his profession also. Some of the points were that he was so charitably disposed that no one ever went away from his home disheartened. Also, he befriended men, made friends with men, irrespective of their rank, especially when he preached the holy name. So when we talk of caste and class and this and that, we see when a pure devotee, he doesn't see on the body level. And that's something which we should understand very deeply, that many things in this world we see around us and we get confused or we are very disappointed. Well, we are not in control of many things, but we are in control of our own understanding. And our understanding is that we are so fortunate to be in India, which people talk of United Nations and how they can... But after United Nations were actually brought in some 75, 80 years ago, it was actually formed, another 60 countries have come up. That means there will be more divisions than before. So it is not the physical, and it is ultimately seeing that Krishna is the proprietor of everything, God is the controller, and what is our role. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and he shows, and also Prabhupada has shown us, ISKCON does show us that there is no consideration at all of whether you are educated or not, whether you are man or woman, whether you are rich or poor, whether you are old or young. It has absolutely, what caste you come from, what state you come from, what background, is absolutely of no consequence at all. And he befriended all them. He never bore any grudge. Means he never thought ill about anybody. And it is said that those who were jealous or attempted to obstruct him in his spiritual life because of his very fearlessness and forthright approach, there were people who were offended by him, or not offended, but those who were affected by him. So there were many who were trying to obstruct him, especially the bogus sadhus and many atheists and others. But it was said that many of them in the long run became ashamed, and they would come back and beg forgiveness. And he would never refuse that. He would always immediately pardon them. His sense of universal brotherhood, we talked about that, that is what made him a friend of all. He was never proud. He never uttered a word that would injure anyone's feelings. So he spoke, in spite of his being very clear, very forthright, but he was very careful in what he spoke, how he spoke. He never chastised anyone unless he was perfectly confident that he had the right to do so for that person's welfare. This is a very important lesson for us, all of us, because this is a mistake many times we make, that we get into someone and we feel we are right, and we chastise someone, we criticize someone, talk to someone. We may not have the authority, we should question that, whether it is our right. So he said that unless he was absolutely confident that he had the right to do so for that person's welfare. So he carefully considered it before doing that. And anyone who received a warning from him always felt himself purified by this experience. He did not possess the least amount of vanity. He was completely humble, although he was honored and respected throughout Bengal, Bihar and Odisha. His profound knowledge of philosophy endeared him, brought him very close to the educated, and his devout bhakti at the same time made him very close and friendly with the gentle and the ruffians. So that means all sections of society, the educated, non-educated, all of them loved him because of his bhakti made him the great personality that he was. Now, as a government official, he was taken into confidence by the British government. Now, this is quite interesting because we've seen that if he is very strong for his own faith, then probably we would think that the government would actually be putting him on a watch list or something. But they could see that he transcended all that. He will not budge from his beliefs, and he knew what was true. But he also knew the Quran, he knew the Bible, so projecting one religion was another. His religion was Sanatan Dharma. His faith was that everyone comes under Krishna, whether you are born in X continent or Y continent. So it did not matter externally. So whichever faith could take us to Krishna or to God would be welcome. So he could demonstrate that confidence even in the government officials. So they could actually take him into confidence. Otherwise they would always be hesitant but they knew about his integrity. Also, the government of Bengal on more than one occasion wanted to bestow honors and titles on him. But he humbly declined on the ground that such honor would stand against the holy mission. Against his holy mission. Such honor would stand against holy mission. That means it would affect his preaching mission. So he never took. There was nobody more strict than he in observance of moral duties. Right from the small, when he was born till the time he departed. And he also never allowed his associates to deviate from the path of duty. Now this is an important lesson. He avoided the company of anyone on whom he had the least suspicion of bad motives. He avoided the company of anyone on whom he had the least suspicion of bad motives. That means, if he felt that on his path, his beliefs, his values, if that was going to be kind of affected by people who had ill motives, he would just avoid it. Better not to. So they don't have to come into any controversy, any conflict. Just, that's what we can learn to do that. Sometimes, you know, we say, how can we not criticize? But if we just have to ignore that. It doesn't mean that we ignore the person. We just don't want to hear about it. Oftentimes, if we want to hear gossip, we want to hear something, so we want to keep in touch, and then we say, no, but that is wrong. But why do we need to do that? There's so many aspects of material life which we may be living separately from and believing separately from, but somehow something pulls us into constantly being in touch, and therefore we get negative thoughts and we express it, so we get strongly opinionated. He had to encounter unpleasantness many times when he refused to accept any gift or present from any person, because he was above corruption. So some people were also offering him gifts for obvious reasons. And this is not just now, this is from that time. And people wanted to, because especially if he was a judge, they thought, but he was completely above corruption. Another very practical plan, the word debt, as it were, was unknown to him. And he was very prompt in making payments. So even a practical thing like money, he would never incur or never have any debt. So it was not just money, but any obligations also. He would always want to, not be obligated to someone and want to do reciprocate. He was always true to his word and he was always very punctual. He was also, he wrote proficiently, profusely. We saw that he was, he was an expert linguist. He was in English, Urdu, Persian, Odia, Bengali, Sanskrit. Also, he had a very curious mind for history and for research. So, every day he used to keep his time for reading books. But in that, he was always very, it was always attached to how he could expand his understanding of Krishna consciousness, how Chaitanya Charitamrita and Srimad Bhagavatam could combine. Was a voracious reader of the Puranas, could cite passages of other religions. From the age of 12, when he had written Harikatha and Shamba Nishamba Yuddha, until his final days, the pen was never idle. Means he was a very proficient writer. He composed hundreds of poems and songs. If you want to see some of the songs that he we sang today, some of the bhajans that we heard today this morning were his. Even Jai Radha Madhav, we normally sing, start everywhere in every Bhagavatam lecture is written by him. Gopinath, we sing Mama Nivedana Sunal. Gurudev, Kripa Bindu Diya. Then Manasa Deho. Then the Prasad prayers also, both the Sharira Vidyajal and Ekadina Shanti Pure was written by him. Radha Krishna Bol Bol Bolore Sobhai was written by him. Vaishnav Thakur. Vibhavari Shesha, Ami Jamuna Puline. Our God Arti also, Kipa Jaya Jaya Gorachan, which we sing in the evening. And the Bhog Arti also, Majabha Katva Vatsal, Yashomati Nandan. All these are actually written by him. So, in fact, he is part of our, you can say he's, if we are, in so many ways, unknowingly, he is actually an integral part of our own life. Of course, his preaching was his mission, and he established over 500 Namahattas. That's what he called the marketplace for the holy name. So, centers where people could come together, congregate, and have bhajans, kirtans, often go on Harinam, Sankirtan also on the roads. So, and his whole motive was that, which he used to preach, that all various theories and religions could be unified through the scientific teachings of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, he understood that all aspects of life, all aspects of relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all combined, if we just could follow Srimad Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita. He had taken initiation from Vipin Bihari Goswami, who was in the disciplic succession of Sri Vansi Vadanananda Thakur. Vansi Vadanananda Thakur was a close associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who was actually given the responsibility when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas. He was given the responsibility for taking care of Mother Sachi Mata and Vishnupriya. So the same Vansi Vadanananda Thakur, his disciple, in his disciple succession, Bipin Bihari Goswami appeared, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur took initiation from him. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur was, you can say, much closer, and he really learned. His main Shiksha Guru was Jagannathas Babaji Maharaj, who really actually influenced, had a very deep connection with him, because he was considered like the spiritual leader of all the Vaishnavas in the Navadvipa area. And he was much, much senior to, in age also, probably about maybe 60 years or so older than Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So, Jagannathas Babaji Maharaj, he was so, he was a complete authority. So when Bhaktivinoda Thakur, one of his greatest contributions is that he actually discovered the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Mayapur. So till that time, so among many things, this is one of the key aspects of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's life, that when he did a lot of research, he went through so many old scriptures, so many old documents and so on, and he found that actually at that time there was a belief that the birthplace was on the west bank of the Ganges, and when Bhaktivinoda Thakur went, he saw that actually there was some on the other side, there were some tulsi leaves also growing. And he had also read in Bhakti Ratnakar, where it was said, clearly said that the Supreme Lord, Sri Gaur Sundar, will appear in a place called Mayapur, which is really in the center of Navadvip Dham. And just to verify that, so he was becoming increasingly confident, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that actually, and he saw there were some people who were staying there, who were there for many years, and who believed that actually the birthplace was not what was considered, it was on the other side. So then he brought his spiritual guru, that is Jagannathas Babaji Maharaj, who at that time was 120 years old. And, he could not even walk, he was practically blind. So he took them in a basket, he carried them in a basket, and he was so shriveled up, tight, he couldn't, and he had not walked also for many years. So he said that, let me take him to that place and see if he has any reactions. Because he was still very, mentally alert, though he could not see and he could not walk. As soon as he took Jagannathas Babaji Maharaj, carried him in the basket, and he set the basket down, Jagannathas Babaji Maharaj just leaped in the air. Now, he had never walked, but he just leaped in the air more than what Bhaktivinoda Thakur's height was. And he started jumping and he started, saying, Jai Sachinandan, God Hari. So basically, establishing and concluding authentically that this is the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So that was a great contribution of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So he took initiation from Vipin Bihari, but now His relationship with God Kishoradas Babaji Maharaj was very amazing. God Kishoradas Babaji Maharaj, if you see in the disciplic succession, if you see that Prabhupada, then after Prabhupada, there is Guru Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's Guru is God Kishoradas Babaji Maharaj. But God Kishoradas Babaji Maharaj was already a Paramhamsa when Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a district magistrate, and we saw how he was leading his life. So they were in that sense contemporaries. But still, God Kishoradas Babaji Maharaj, who never took any disciple and who was so humble, so advanced spiritually, but so humble that he would actually hide himself in a lavatory so that people would not come to him and bother him. But still, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was told by Bhaktivinoda Thakur that you must take initiation from God Kishoradas Babaji Maharaj. So eventually he gave him. Now the same God Kishoradas Babaji Maharaj, a Paramhamsa, but considered Bhaktivinoda Thakur to be a Shikshak Guru. And they had a very close relationship. So, because of his elevated spiritual understanding. So we can understand from this also that how the real genuine sadhus could see the Bhaktivinoda Thakur's unique contribution. And of course, finally about his departure, he took Babaji Diksha from God Kishoradas Babaji Maharaj, and he was then accepting disciples later on. And in 2014, June 23rd, exactly at noon, he entered the eternal pastimes on the same day as we see as Gadadhar Pandit. So what we can learn from Bhaktivinoda Thakur's life, that this is a perfect example of how someone can be in this world, not of this world, not belonging to this world, but still given, taking all the responsibilities that he has been given, led a very high, pure, saintly life, doing the highest good for others. We see that his thinking was entirely encompassing the whole world, not just his own life. He had a strong spiritual sadhana, at the same time maintained and prospered in every aspect of his life. So we can of course not imitate him, but we can follow in his footsteps, and we consider ourselves fortunate and try to repay our gratitude by just reminding ourselves that of our great fortune, and therefore not to misplace the great fortune. So on this auspicious day, we can actually think how much Bhaktivinoda Thakur, if we take the conclusion of his life, to say that he made spiritual life so vibrant, so dynamic, so practical, and so joyful also. If you see how he could do this, then whatever aspect of life we are in, you know, whichever period we are in, see, it's not that everything is on a state level. We also, he also went through such difficulties. We didn't have time to discuss, like his wife, his family, many children were very seriously ill at one time, because he had put one bogus sadhu in jail who was very powerful, who had mystical powers and kept it in his hair. And he was actually he could actually take somebody's life. So many sufferings he also went through. The same way we go through sufferings, but the stability that spiritual life should bring in, it comes through this fearlessness that comes is by seeing what is the highest priority for us in life and trying to put ourselves on that line. If we put that, we have many priorities, and we have to have. We can't have only one, and we have, because responsibility means it. But within that, the priority has to be ultimately the final guiding principle for us, and that's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur showed us by his life, by putting special time in his life on work for Krishna. So even though he spent 7 hours or so in the court, completely focused on his job, but the remaining 17 hours was totally, entirely consumed by, just like Arjun, for serving Krishna. So on this day we can pray that we all have the same, we at least get the same kind of resolution to try and continue our path steadily forward. So I'll end the lecture here. Thank you very much. Thank you.
sir.
Sorry, I completely missed. So on this very auspicious day of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's disappearance day, there is an announcement. There is a wonderful booklet, a book, Srila Sachidananda Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So this is it's an offering by this based on the teachings of His Holiness Gaur Govinda Swami Maharaj. And this booklet describes Bhaktivinoda Thakur's life, his teachings, and his deity Shri Radha Madhav's rediscovery, the current location, and how they're taken care of presently. So this book is available. Booklet is available downstairs. So strongly recommend that. It's hardly only 24 pages. So it's something which you can't even say, I don't have time for it. So it would be worthwhile, you know, just capturing the essence of whatever Bhaktivinoda Thakur lived for. So that's all.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Thank you, Krishnendra Prabhu, for giving such a nice class. So now we will have, on the occasion of the disappearance day of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, we will have bhajans composed by him. So all devotees are requested to turn the other way, face Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And then we will have bhajans till 12 o'clock. Then we will have Pushpanjali ceremony, bhoga offering. And then 12:30 we will have Gaurarti. Prasadam will start at 12 o'clock. Hare Krishna.